to the louse, no swearing. You see him walking around with his headphones flaring, alone in his own zone, cold and he don't care. He's a problem child. What bothers him all comes out when he talks about his dad walking out. Cause he hates him so bad that he blocked him out. If he ever saw him again, he'd probably knock him out. His thoughts are whack, he's mad, so he's talking back. Talking black, brainwashed from rock and rap. He sacked his pants, blue rags, and a stocking cap. His stepfather hit him, so he socked him back and broke his nose. His house is a broken home, there's no control. He just lets his emotions go.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful and comfortable, 'cause we were powerful.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The AFL-CIO has joined a growing list of organizations stepping up to monitor polls on Election Day. After the debacle of 2000, numerous groups want to make sure voting goes more smoothly this time around. The Federation, which has endorsed Democratic candidate John Kerry, plans on setting up voter advocacy teams in 12 battleground states. The teams will be charged with educating voters on their rights under the new 2002 Help America Vote Act and to make sure that voters are properly registered. Concerns have been growing in states that plan on rolling out electronic voting machines for the first time. Some states, including Maryland, Florida, and California, have reported problems with the machines during test runs and in smaller statewide elections.
Jockeys who sued and won the right to wear their union patch during the Kentucky Derby filed in U.S. District Court this week to have the Kentucky Horse Racing Authority pay their attorney fees, totaling more than $93,000. In April of this year, members of the Jockeys Guild threatened to defy state law prohibiting the display of promotional symbols during races. Kentucky Derby jockeys threatened to wear their union patches anyway, saying the racing authority was violating their First Amendment rights. But the labor action wasn't necessary after a district court judge ruled on May 1st that jockeys could wear their union logos. Albert Fiss, vice president of the Jockeys Guild, explains why it's so important for jockeys to be able to display their union patch.
It's our intent to raise the awareness of the general public as well as the race fan that these jockeys do a very dangerous job, do not get paid, by and large, very much money for the job that they do, and it's high time that they get the kind of benefits that other people in similar professions are receiving.
A nationwide stoppage at diamond mines across Botswana has entered its fourth day. Thousands of miners continue to defy a court order to go back to work in Botswana, the world's leading producer of uncut diamonds. The strike came after a dispute over wage and bonus demands with Debswana Mining Company could not be resolved. Debswana is owned partially by the country and partially by the De Beers Group. The workers are complaining of a large gap between their wages and those of their managers. The union leaders are set to go to court today to face charges of launching an illegal strike.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a Rice University study, women who care for an elderly parent are 2.5 times more likely than non-caregivers to live in poverty later in life, and 5 times more likely to depend on supplemental security income. The numbers increase dramatically for single women who are 4 times more likely to live in poverty and 36% more likely to receive SSI when they're older.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
After 9/11, there was a headline on a French paper, "Today We Are All Americans." We had the world on our side in a way that hasn't been seen since post-World War II. Within, you know, a few months after that, with the obsession with Iraq, it was washed away. I was a registered Republican, now I'm a Democrat, and I'm voting for John Kerry in November.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Wonderful news, folks. The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high-tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high-tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best high-tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain.
Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Let's stop competing with the music. Believers in the American way. I'm Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman, who, even as we speak now, is on his way to Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's got a Friday evening lecture. That would be, Friday evening? Okay. I think it's supposed to be Thursday. I don't know. Anyway, go to greatmystery.org. He's got a Friday evening lecture, August 27th, at the Armory for the Arts. That's 7:30. It's a lecture Tom's doing, We the People, A Call to Take Back America, and then a Saturday workshop on the 28th, Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation at the Santa Fe Women's Club. So all you lucky people down in New Mexico, you get what we're deprived us of, and it's going to be great. You'll love seeing Tom in person and hearing him. He is more intelligent in person, if you can believe it, than he is on the radio. But enough of that. We have a guest on the phone with us, and I want to get right to the phone caller because he's taking a lot of time out of his busy day to be with us. The government is increasingly using corporations to do its surveillance work, folks, allowing it to get around restrictions that protect the privacy and civil liberty of Americans. Data aggregators, companies that aggregate information from numerous private and public databases and private companies, are collecting information about us and giving or selling it back to the government. And because laws that restrict government data collection don't apply to private industry, the government is able to bypass restrictions on domestic surveillance. Congress needs to close such loopholes, the ACLU, the venerable American Civil Liberties Union, said. Quote, Americans would really be shocked to discover the extent of the practices that are now common in both industry and government, said the ACLU's Jay Stanley, author of the report Industry and Government. Know that, so they have a strong incentive to not publicize a lot of what's going on. And the name of the report that we're referring to actually is the Surveillance Industrial Complex. And on that note, I want to introduce Mr. Jay Stanley, Public Education Coordinator for the ACLU's Technology and Liberty Program. And hello, Mr. Stanley.
Hi, Rama. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's great. I really appreciate you taking time from your busy day to explain some of this to us, because folks out there, I mean, if you're feeling a little paranoid nowadays, well, maybe there's a little bit of reason to. And I guess first off, I'll ask Mr. Stanley, Jay, if you'll introduce yourself however you want to be remembered by the public, because oftentimes I leave people with bad memories of who it was as a guest, but also how you guys came about to do this report, the Surveillance Industrial Complex, and kind of what it covered.
Yeah, well, we did this report after we noticed that in many different areas the government was following the same pattern, which was expanding its ability to track the activities of individuals by tapping into the increasing data collection that's going on in the private sector. I mean, I think a lot of us know that in our daily lives we're asked for our personal information every time we, you know, buy anything.
Yeah.
And we're constantly being asked and for information that allows companies to track us.
Right.
And we just perceive that computers are changing things in terms of, you know, how many of our activities are being recorded and tracked and analyzed. And that activity is accelerating in the private sector because it's very profitable for companies to keep track of what you do, what you buy, who you are. And companies have really discovered this in the last 10 years or so.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, it's funny you say that, especially about the private companies gathering the information. And what's so important here, I guess, for folks to understand, the private companies are gathering information that if the government came to you directly and asked for you to give them to them directly, they couldn't legally do that under many circumstances. And the other day I received a promotional pen in the mail, and it was a really nice pen. And I said, gee, you know, I like these pens. The wife and I, we do this internet broadcast venture, and I wanted to do something with that because they were really good quality pens. So I called up the company to place a small order of them. And the guy wouldn't let me place an order without giving him my email. And I was like, you don't need my email. He goes, well, we got to know how to get hold of it. I said, bull, you got hold of me. You sent me the pen. And it just finally I said, screw it. And I just, you know, I just hung up. But now they're expecting to get stuff out of us, and actually we voluntarily give it. Why do we do this?
Well, I think that a lot of people don't realize the extent to which you're not just giving information to the person who's in front of you. You're giving it to the company, which has a large database and which often feeds that information to other companies called data aggregators, which are companies that are in the business of creating files on all of us.
Yep.
With as much detailed information as they can, and that information then can be made accessible to the government.
Right.
So, I mean, in the 1974 Privacy Act, the government was, after all the abuses of the 60s and 70s and J. Edgar Hoover and all the rest came to light, The Congress passed a law which barred the government from keeping dossiers on individuals who weren't involved in criminal wrongdoing. And now the government is circumventing that requirement by not keeping this detailed information itself, but by just plugging into the computers of companies that do.
Right. We're talking to Jay Stanley, Public Education Coordinator of the ACLU's Technology and Liberty Program. If you have any questions or comments for Jay, 1-866-889-8894. And also, while we're at it, Jay, a quick plug for the ACLU, if you want to. How do the people get hold of the organization?
Yeah, you can go onto our website. It's www.aclu.org/privacy, and you'll find a link to this report and many other materials on the way that, you know, it's really a traditional American value is being rapidly eroded behind the scenes often.
Yeah, yeah, and I want to say I'm a proud card-carrying member of the ACLU. And
we're glad to have you.
Yeah, well, I don't regret a penny that I sent to you guys.
One of the really interesting things about these privacy issues is that often we find that liberals and conservatives agree on this. We've gotten a lot of support from conservative groups on these surveillance issues because they don't trust government. They come at it from a slightly different direction from people on the left often, but it's led to some very important privacy victories in Congress, such as the defeat of a program called Total Information Awareness, which is run out of the Pentagon.
Yeah, yeah. Which brings us, I want to get to that heading there that you folks talk about in your report, the surveillance industrial complex. But a couple things. One, you mentioned about this kind of nexus of the left and the right there. The name Dick Armey comes to mind. Isn't he working with you folks on some of these privacy issues or big government issues?
He was a supporter of ours on some of these issues. For example, he helped defeat this program called TIPS, which was proposed by the administration, which would have recruited millions of utility workers, cable workers, people who enter your home to look for suspicious things and report them to the government.
Yep.
And this really would have been an outrageous intrusion on government, and Dick Armey did help defeat that program. And we're also working with Bob Barr on privacy issues.
Wow. these are people I never thought I'd like in my lifetime.
And certainly we disagree deeply on many issues, but where you agree, you need to find as many allies as you can get.
I agree. And unfortunately, civil liberty seems to be one of these things that in today's tell me if I'm wrong on this. I describe it as a lot of right-wing activist judges who just take every opportunity they can to reduce or to misinterpret what the Constitution says and reduce what our civil liberties are. Am I off the ball on that one?
I think that that's certainly going on, but there's also a larger trend, which is that the courts overall have always been very, very slow to catch up to new technologies.
Right.
It took 40 years from the first case before the Supreme Court acknowledged the right to privacy in your telephone calls and that the government had to get a warrant to tap your phone calls. And we have so many new technologies that are arriving so quickly, from these databases and barcodes and radio chips being placed in products and so forth, that the courts have really not kept up and not expanded the privacy rights that our founding fathers put in the Constitution, in the Fourth Amendment and elsewhere, to catch up to new technologies.
Right.
It took 40 years from the first case before the Supreme Court acknowledged the right to privacy in your telephone calls and that the government had to get a warrant to tap your phone calls. And we have so many new technologies that are arriving so quickly, from these databases and barcodes and radio chips being placed in products and so forth, that the courts have really not kept up and not expanded the privacy rights that our founding fathers put in the Constitution, in the Fourth Amendment and elsewhere, and have not kept those privacy rights up to date in order to protect. It is a conservative thing. We're trying to conserve the privacy that Americans have always enjoyed.
Yes.
And so I think that, you know, it's bigger than any particular set of judges.
Okay, we're talking to Jay Stanley, Public Education Coordinator of the ACLU's Technology Liberty Program, and in specific, we're trying to get around to the surveillance industrial complex and how the government is conscripting businesses and individuals in the construction of a surveillance society.
But we see that the EU and the UK have for digital privacy, and why we need something maybe like that.
Sure. I think I missed there was a technical problem there, and I think I may have missed the first part of
the
question.
I was asking about the outsourcing of our digital financial data, especially tax data from tax preparers and other financial banking data going to India and other outsourced countries where we have no control over our privacy there and how it could possibly be used to compromise our privacy and the EU privacy.
No, I think that is
law.
A problem. In some ways, it's the problem is limited because our own privacy laws are so weak and non-existent that when you're moving from a regime with such limited privacy protections, it doesn't really matter often to move the data overseas. But we do have privacy protections in some areas, especially concerning financial data. And, you know, it can be open season for companies when they shift information overseas, and the laws and the court precedents just have not been set.
Yeah.
And so that is a problem that needs to be addressed.
But if my taxes are being done in India, how do our privacy laws affect them? For instance, there's a strike there today for telephone answerers.
Yeah, it's just an area that has not been litigated at all, and it's totally unclear exactly how our privacy laws go into effect over there.
That makes me feel a little vulnerable. Thank you.
You probably are,
well,
Glenn.
It's just one of many of areas where our privacy protections are very, very weak. And the United States, to address the second part of your question, I did hear, the United States is practically the only industrialized country that doesn't have an overarching data protection law, doesn't have a data protection commissioner or
secretary.
We're coming up
on a hard break here. Can you stick through for a couple minutes?
I sure can.
Okay, we'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I'm rock solid, has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Tom's on his way to Santa Fe, New Mexico, even as we speak. On the phone with us, Mr. Jay Stanley, Public Education Coordinator of the ACLU's Technology and Liberty Program. And we're discussing the Surveillance Industrial Complex. And thank you again for joining us. All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Tom's on his way to Santa Fe, New Mexico, even as we speak. On the phone with us, Mr. Jay Stanley, Public Education Coordinator of the ACLU's Technology and Liberty Program. And we're discussing the Surveillance Industrial Complex. And thank you again for joining us, Jay.
Thanks for having me on.
This is really great because it's a tough subject to talk about in some ways. And this report is on the internet at, what was that you said, aclu.org/privacy. Okay. So if you go to aclu.org, though, they have links to it on the front page.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A couple questions I want to ask about here. I mean, one is it seems to me we could substitute military-industrial complex, drug-testing-industrial complex, the prison-industrial complex. It all seems to be, in the case of surveillance, you make mention in a couple places in the report about databases and how some of these companies have been pushing more intrusive information gathering because they can develop the databases and the software for it. Am I describing this accurately?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, in addition to, I mean, what we talk about in the report is the fact that the government has more and more powers to seize the data that independent companies are collecting on their own for their own reasons. But there's also a strong group of companies that are in the surveillance for profit, or in the surveillance business directly for profit, and have lobbied the government in order to increase its lobbying. For example, a company may have a lot of databases, and then after September 11th, they said, you know, how can we turn this into a Homeland Security profit center for us?
Right. And of course, I mean, it's a corporations. They're basically legally obligated to make the most money that they can for their stockholders under the circumstances. So we end up in this kind of big circle. We'll never go through the whole report, so I don't want to pretend to. I do encourage people to get it from the net. It's in PDF form and to read it. It's enlightening as all get out. But Jay, every circle can be broken. Let me just leave that as an assertion without arguing it. Where is the broken point, or where can we break the circle where you keep getting this kind of business and government in a yin and yang type situation? How do we separate that so we go down a different path? Or is there a way to?
Well, I think that there is. Our privacy may be on life support, but it's not dead yet. We still enjoy a lot of privacy, and we need to fight for it. And I think that people all over the country, and we see this every day, are increasingly realizing the extent to which their privacy is being taken away.
Right.
We can do that by acting as citizens, to demand that our government not pass a legislation like the Patriot Act, which gives the government such a free hand to demand that private companies turn over information on its customers and really gives the government a way to spy on a massive scale on individuals' private activities. And we can act as consumers and try to demand that the companies that we do business with don't betray us and don't share the intimate details of our transactions.
I tried that, Jay, but I don't get the pens now. Well, you know what? Look, I can't count the times. I've actually walked out of more than one business who wanted me to put a Social Security number on a check. Okay? And where I've just said, screw it. If you don't want my business that bad, bye. I mean, is it really reasonable? How do we fight back against this business's insistence? You got about 30 seconds
here. Well, I think that through awareness and through taking actions that you talk about and through insisting, you know, as citizens that we pass regulations that protect us. There's a lot that individuals can do in terms of raising a little bit of a fuss with individual businesses and letting them know that we care about our privacy and that we're conscious of these things.
And one
but
of them,
also we have to act collectively to enact the kind of regulations that almost every other country has.
Okay, we got to get out of here, Jay. I ran over time.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The AFL-CIO has joined a growing list of organizations stepping up to monitor polls on Election Day. After the debacle of 2000, numerous groups want to make sure voting goes more smoothly this time around. The Federation, which has endorsed Democratic candidate John Kerry, plans on setting up voter advocacy teams in 12 battleground states. The teams will be charged with educating voters on their rights under the new 2002 Help America Vote Act and to make sure that voters are properly registered. Concerns have been growing in states that plan on rolling out electronic voting machines for the first time. Some states, including Maryland, Florida, and California, have reported problems with the machines during test runs and in smaller statewide elections.
Jockeys who sued and won the right to wear their union patch during the Kentucky Derby filed in U.S. District Court this week to have the Kentucky Horse Racing Authority pay their attorney fees, totaling more than $93,000. In April of this year, members of the Jockeys Guild threatened to defy state law prohibiting the display of promotional symbols during races. Kentucky Derby jockeys threatened to wear their union patches anyway, saying the racing authority was violating their First Amendment rights. But the labor action wasn't necessary after a district court judge ruled on May 1st that jockeys could wear their union logos. Albert Fiss, vice president of the Jockeys Guild, explains why it's so important for jockeys to be able to display their union patch.
It's our intent to raise the awareness of the general public as well as the race fan that these jockeys do a very dangerous job, do not get paid, by and large, very much money for the job that they do, and it's high time that they get the kind of benefits that other people in similar professions are receiving.
A nationwide stoppage at diamond mines across Botswana has entered its fourth day. Thousands of miners continue to defy a court order to go back to work in Botswana, the world's leading producer of uncut diamonds. The strike came after a dispute over wage and bonus demands with Debswana Mining Company could not be resolved. Debswana is owned partially by the country and partially by the De Beers Group. The workers are complaining of a large gap between their wages and those of their managers. The union leaders are set to go to court today to face charges of launching an illegal strike.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a Rice University study, women who care for an elderly parent are 2.5 times more likely than non-caregivers to live in poverty later in life and 5 times more likely to depend on supplemental security income. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. I'm Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom, who, as we speak, is on his way to New Mexico. He's got a couple of appearances coming up this weekend, Friday, August 27th. He's got an evening lecture, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. That's at the Armory for the Arts in on Old Pecos Trail, Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then Saturday workshop, August 28th, it's Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. That's at the Santa Fe Women's Club, also out at the Old Pecos Trail in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You can get more information at greatmystery.org for all of that. And I got a quote for the day here for everyone. And here's, this is one, it's going to have a lot of relevance for today as we go on. We've got a really great guest coming up at the top of the next hour. We're going to be talking about the John Kerry's 1971 testimony before the Senate. And August 28th, it's Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. That's at the Santa Fe Women's Club, also out at the Old Pecos Trail in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You can get more information at greatmystery.org for all of that. And I got a quote for the day here for everyone. And here's, this is one, it's going to have a lot of relevance for today as we go on. We've got a really great guest coming up at the top of the next hour. We're going to be talking about the John Kerry's 1971 testimony before the Senate, and hopefully talk a little bit about the Winter Soldier investigation. So we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, 1-866-889-8894 if you want to come and join the conversation. Here's the quote I want to give you. Every president who has been successful, at least that I know of in the history of this republic, has developed both informal and formal means of getting checks on whether people who tell him things are, in fact, telling him the whole truth. And that was just recently said. So keep that quote in mind. There's lots of good ones rocking around. Glenn, who had called up earlier there, was talking about information being shipped overseas and how does that affect our privacy. Well, I don't know. But here's an article. This is a Friday, March 5th article from sfgate.com. San Francisco's Tickle Incorporated, an online matchmaking and networking service, makes it very clear that customers' personal information will not be shared with others. Tickle never discloses your personal information to any third party unless you have given us your express permission, the company says in its privacy policy. Well, how then does Tickle reconcile this position with the fact that it's now evaluating a Philippine firm, Quinteraction, to begin outsourcing customer service in the near future? They're within our system, answered James Currier, Tickle's founder and chief executive officer. They'll be under contract to us. Well, in other words, these people, they say, we will protect your information, but then they'll ship your information off to somebody else, and they have no way to protect your information. If you go to the store and you buy a big, good safe and stick it down in your basement and put your personal documents inside that safe, you can protect your personal information. However, if you go and pick out a random house down the street and go up, knock on the door, and say, hey, would you guys hold on to my personal information? You don't know if it's going to get protected. It doesn't matter what they say. And if they're not really under any legal control of you, what do you got? And I think that basically answers Glenn's question. It's like most company. Tickle wants it both ways. It seeks the competitive and economic advantages of exporting operations and consequently access to customers' data to cheaper workers abroad. At the same time, it keenly wants customers to believe that their privacy is a paramount concern. Well, no. This is the answer to Dave's question, Glenn's question, rather. Is if privacy was a paramount concern of these people, they wouldn't give your information out for somebody else to hold on to. I can figure that out, and I'm pretty darn stupid. I'm also stupid enough to figure this one out. You know, I don't want to sound religious on this. This is just a turn of the phrase. Thank God for Bev Harris. Without Bev Harris, we would all be floundering in a soup of confusing voting claims all over the place. But, you know, Bev Harris went out and started. They wouldn't give your information out for somebody else to hold on to. I can figure that out, and I'm pretty darn stupid. I'm also stupid. I'm also stupid enough to figure this one out. You know, I don't want to sound religious on this. This is just a turn of the phrase. Thank God for Bev Harris. Without Bev Harris, we would all be floundering in a soup of confusing voting claims all over the place. But, you know, Bev Harris went out and started, several years ago now, and started gathering all this information from around the country about computerized voting. And thank God for her. Here's an article that was posted up on Common Dreams News Center titled Some of a Glitch. I guess it was published in These Times yesterday. In Alabama 2002 general election, machines made by election systems will be floundering in a soup of confusing voting claims all over the place. But, you know, Bev Harris went out and started, several years ago now, and started gathering all this information from around the country about computerized voting. And thank God for her. Here's an article that was posted up on Common Dreams News Center titled Some of a Glitch. I guess it was published in These Times yesterday. In Alabama 2002 general election, machines made by election systems and software, otherwise ES&S, flipped the governor's race. 6,300 be forced to provide a paper trail that can verify the results. You tell me. You tell me. I just don't know what to make. They say the voting machines, they're fast, they're easy, and they're fun. All they don't do, they just don't count your votes very well. You know? Canary medicine. But researchers believe there is no connection between the deaths and the chemicals they were exposed to, which seems to be a response we get an awful lot. I can remember with Agent Orange being sprayed all over Vietnam eyes, among other people. They come back with all sorts of problems, and, there's no connection between the chemicals that they were being dosed in and the diseases they came home with. You know, we also hear about this with the so-called Gulf War Syndrome. And you know what? You try Control Alt Net Delete. Oh, is it? Oh, okay. All right, then I think we got it going again. But you know, the Gulf War Syndrome is another perfectly good example. It's never the chemicals' fault. Here, these people go out into the deserts of Iraq, exposed to high levels of depleted uranium and God knows what else. I mean, both from the burning oil well fires and the and all the depleted uranium and the possibility that some chemical weaponry might have been blown up at various ammo dumps, etc. But, you know, that wasn't the chemicals. So these dogs dying after going around and after the September 11th attacks, they have higher rates of cancer and they have lung issues, and it's not the chemicals' faults. Let me bounce around a little bit here. Police say Thatcher... Okay, well, that headline doesn't count. Margaret Thatcher, you remember her? Used to be the British Prime Minister. Margaret Thatcher's son has been arrested in South Africa. He's being accused of taking part in an attempted coup in Equatorial Guinea. So, Maggie Thatcher lives on in her son. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
There is no simple explanation for the problems that afflict amphibians. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. For more than 10 years, scientists around the world have been studying a dramatic decline in the number of frogs and other amphibians. They say the main problem is that we're destroying the places where these creatures live, but they say there's also a lot more to the story. Andrew Blaustein is a biologist at Oregon State University. He says one apparent cause of the declines is harmful ultraviolet radiation from the sun. We're protected from UV radiation by ozone in the upper atmosphere, but the ozone layer has been damaged by synthetic chemicals, and Blaustein says that might be hurting all kinds of amphibians.
When UV hits any living organism, it can cause cell death or a mutation. And if you cause cell death or mutation to a great degree, the entire organism can die, can become deformed and eventually die, or it can be damaged in some other way.
Blaustein says UV radiation can affect amphibians at all stages of life. It can kill them as embryos, it can make them vulnerable to disease after they hatch, and it can even blind them as adults. Researchers say a lot of other problems plague amphibians, including disease and pesticides. Blaustein says it's important to investigate all these factors, especially how they might work together.
I think contaminants play some role. I think UV radiation plays a role. And we've recently shown in the last couple of years there's an interaction between these things, that if there's increasing UV or if there's more contamination, then these animals' immune systems are a little bit hampered, and they get diseases more easily. So they're all interrelated.
Blaustein says we need to know why amphibians are declining. He says whatever is happening to them could happen to a lot of other living organisms. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearless seriously exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
What would you do if I sang out of tune?
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom, who is on his way to New Mexico. Got a pretty busy weekend of talking out there. What would you do if I sang out of tune, you folks? Well, you would suffer, wouldn't you? You would suffer deeply and farly and greatly. Well, I wish I had my dictionary. I need to look up a word, hedonics. There's a thing called hedonics, and they use it in part, and I know it. I've seen it in connection with the GDP, the gross domestic products, and they use it to make up figures on as far as how much some particular article, the sale of specifically computers, what I was looking at, how much they actually increased the GDP. And by the use of this fancy word hedonics, the government's figured out that they can actually credit a greater increase in the GDP to things like computers than is actually, you know, accounted for by our paying for them. But don't worry, it's kind of complex. I'll get to that in a second here. Real quick, in the Wall Street Journal, they say in July, average weekly earnings of production and non-supervisory workers in the U.S. adjusted for inflation were down 0.7% from a year earlier. Yes. I wonder if that's a number that the Republicans will be touting at their convention. It'll be pretty interesting. Got a bunch of other things I don't think the Republicans will be touting at their convention. And by the way, we can change all of this, you know, come November. Also, this from the same article in the Wall Street Journal, today's journal, prices of desktop and notebook computers declined by 8% a year during the past decade, according to market researcher IDC of Framingham, Massachusetts. But, listen closely to this, but because the machine's computing power, memory, and other features have improved, the index, the inflation index shows computer prices have tumbled almost 25% a year since 1997, despite the fact over the last decade they've actually only declined by 8%. This is what hedonics does. This is how hedonics also adds to the gross domestic product. It's a way for them to make up figures. They go, those numbers are too low. Let's add something on to them. I know. We'll give a higher value, so that what people actually buy for $10, we'll say they're buying for $50. That'll increase the GDP. When it comes to inflation, well, I mean, the prices only went down 8% a year during the past. Oh, hell with that. We'll just say because the stuff is so much better, prices go down 25% a year. It's called make-believe government. Alice in Wonderland. Georgie, pudding and pie. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The AFL-CIO has joined a growing list of organizations stepping up to monitor polls on Election Day. After the debacle of 2000, numerous groups want to make sure voting goes more smoothly this time around. The Federation, which has endorsed Democratic candidate John Kerry, plans on setting up voter advocacy teams in 12 battleground states. The teams will be charged with educating voters on their rights under the new 2002 Help America Vote Act and to make sure that voters are properly registered. Concerns have been growing in states that plan on rolling out electronic voting machines for the first time. Some states, including Maryland, Florida, and California, have reported problems with the machines during test runs and in smaller statewide elections.
Jockeys who sued and won the right to wear their union patch during the Kentucky Derby filed in U.S. District Court this week to have the Kentucky Horse Racing Authority pay their attorney fees, totaling more than $93,000. In April of this year, members of the Jockeys Guild threatened to defy state law prohibiting the display of promotional symbols during races. Kentucky Derby jockeys threatened to wear their union patches anyway, saying the racing authority was violating their First Amendment rights. But the labor action wasn't necessary after a district court judge ruled on May 1st that jockeys could wear their union logos. Albert Fiss, vice president of the Jockeys Guild, explains why it's so important for jockeys to be able to display their union patch.
It's our intent to raise the awareness of the general public as well as the race fan that these jockeys do a very dangerous job, do not get paid, by and large, very much money for the job that they do, and it's high time that they get the kind of benefits that other people in similar professions are receiving.
A nationwide stoppage at diamond mines across Botswana has entered its fourth day. Thousands of miners continue to defy a court order to go back to work in Botswana, the world's leading producer of uncut diamonds. The strike came after a dispute over wage and bonus demands with Debswana Mining Company could not be resolved. Debswana is owned partially by the country and partially by the De Beers Group. The workers are complaining of a large gap between their wages and those of their managers. The union leaders are set to go to court today to face charges of launching an illegal strike.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
According to a Rice University study, women who care for an elderly parent are 2.5 times more likely than non-caregivers to live in poverty later in life and 5 times more likely to depend on supplemental security income. The numbers increase dramatically for single women who are 4 times more likely to live in poverty and 46% more likely to receive SSI when they're older.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
After 9/11, there was a headline on a French paper, "Today We Are All Americans." We had the world on our side in a way that hasn't been seen since post-World War II. Within, you know, a few months after that, with the obsession with Iraq, it was washed away. I was a registered Republican. Now I'm a Democrat. And I'm voting for John Kerry in November.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
The Donald is back in the news. Donnie Trump, the trumped-up corporate personality who poses as a hard-headed business guru on a television reality show, is steadily sinking into an entirely different reality of his own making. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts, Inc., Donnie's real-life corporate empire, has lost $66 million in the first half of this year, double what it lost last year. This is on top of the heavy burden of a $1.8 billion debt that is squeezing the financial life out of the company. Thanks to Trump's managerial incompetence, his business has never managed to make a profit in its decade of existence, and it's now teetering on the precipice of bankruptcy. His performance is so wretched that he's being pushed by his investors to step aside as CEO. Yet, there's the Donald, still posturing as a savvy corporate boss on his TV show. This guy has an ego bigger and more gaseous than Neptune, and the fact that he's a managerial wreck waiting to happen won't deter him from strutting around like a cock of the corporate roost. Indeed, rather than tending to his business woes, he's now launching a new magazine to market himself as a business whiz. Modestly titled Trump World, the magazine will focus on, quote, his personal interests, all of which can be summed up in one word, himself. The PR push for this bi-monthly mag says that the Donald will dish out his, quote, business and real estate advice, as well as offering helpful tips on such mundane matters as how to hire a butler, what to look for when buying an island, and where to stay while in Bora Bora. Incredibly, when he was asked why his own mug was not on the cover of the first issue, Trump airily declared, "I'd like to keep a very low profile." This is Jim Hightower saying, oh, sure, a guy who has a new magazine to hype his Donaldness 24/7 really doesn't want to be part of the celebrity chase.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way, peace, freedom, and everything from coast to coast, all around the world, as a matter of fact. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom's on his way, as we speak, to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Got a busy weekend coming up. He's going to be giving a Friday evening lecture at the Armory for Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico, called We the People, A Call to Take Back America. And then he's got a Saturday workshop at the Santa Fe Women's Club, Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. More information is available at greatmystery.org. And I just want to go ahead and head to the phones, because with us is Professor Todd Gitlin. He's a professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University and published author, among which the title The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage. And if I could, real quick, Professor, just reading out of phones, because with us is Professor Todd Gitlin. He's a professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University and published author, among which the title The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage. And if I could, real quick, Professor, just reading out of an article, Ghost War, the Swift Boat Vets Say John Kerry's Testimony About American Atrocities in Vietnam is Offensive, etc. Just one paragraph here. Today's stench of lies about John Kerry is a stale remnant of the old lies about the war Kerry fought in. As the nation fights another botched war, today's purveyors of war lies are ghastly descendants of the last generation's unpunished deceivers. Indeed, John O'Neill of the outrageously named Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, and every TV talk show within reach, is the very same, the young man recruited by Charles.
Yeah, Kerry mostly here is simply recounting what a large number of veterans said about what they had either done or eyewitnessed. And Kerry goes on in his testimony to say that the responsibility for this is with the civilian officials in Washington who are running this war.
Yes.
And he explicitly says that he does not believe that the soldiers themselves are the primary culprits.
Yeah, absolutely he does, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. Okay, if you would, Professor, and by the way, folks, if you have a question or comment for Professor Gitlin, I apologize, 866-889-8894. Okay, turn our stomachs, Professor. We do need to hear.
This is pretty awful stuff. This is a man named James Duffy, for example. Here's what he says. I served as a machine gunner on a CH-47 Chinook helicopter with Company A, 228th Aviation Battalion, 1st Air Cav Division, from February 67 to April 68. I iced a contingent of Vietnamese peasants chopping wood, and I decided, well, if the Vietnamese can fire a round into my ship, then I can fire as many rounds into the Vietnamese as I want to. So I swung my machine gun onto this group of peasants and opened fire. Fortunately, the gun jammed after one or two rounds, which was pretty lucky, because this group of peasants turned out to be a work party hired by the government to clear the area, and there was GIs guarding them about 50 meters away. But my mind was so psyched out into killing gooks that I never even paid attention to look around and see where I was. I just saw gooks, and I wanted to kill them. I was pretty scared after that happened, because that sort of violated the unwritten code that you can do anything you want to as long as you don't get caught. I guess that's what happened with the My Lai incident. Those guys were just following the same pattern they'd been doing there for 10 years, but they had the misfortune of getting caught at it.
Right.
I looked out across the field, and I spotted a Vietnamese woman peasant running away from the ship. I fired a burst of about 6 or 7 rounds into her back before we hit the ground. When I was being questioned as to what happened about 2 weeks later by a captain in my company, I told him what we did and what I did. We both had a good laugh about it. That was pretty much company policy, and so on. I mean, it goes on like this, in quite a bit of detail, which can be found online. It can be found, some of it quoted in my article in Salon.com this week, and anybody who wants to read the whole testimony from Detroit, it's all been put online at a Virginia site, which is linked to in my article as well.
Yeah, and that's the article at Salon.com, the Ghost War one I was reading a little bit from. Excellent article. And has anybody, I guess somebody must have jumped into the list of people who testified at this Winter Soldier investigation. So somebody must have looked into the at some point and checked their veracity. I mean, were these just a bunch of, I don't know, druggies and drunks coming back?
Well, right. I was concerned about this, of course. So I called a man named William Crandall, who was one of the leaders of Vietnam Veterans Against the War.
Right.
And I was able to find him, and I asked him exactly that question. He said they were concerned about it because some people had brought forward a number of people who had made claims about what they had seen or done in Vietnam, which turned out to be false and fraudulent.
Right.
So he says they made it a point to check out these people, to see their identification. That's why they testify. They cross-check each other, and they speak from the same unit, so that sometimes you have people from the same unit who are testifying about what they see. This is an investigation that is is worthy to make, and I'm not saying, and Kerry didn't say, every word that's spoken here is the gospel truth. All Kerry was saying is that this is what these people said. Their stories make sense, and there's no evidence to the contrary. So, for the I think what's really going on with the Swift Boat gang is that these are people who've never forgiven Kerry for opposing the war.
Right.
And they therefore are not open to evidence. They've even resorted to lies on their own part. As the days go on, more and more of these lies are exposed. But they've done a lot of damage by simply getting up and getting media, free media, to pay attention to their deceptive advertising.
Yeah.
They have created a sort of have you stopped beating your wife situation. Kerry is trying to recover from it, and with the help of truth, maybe he will.
Yeah. Well, I was watching CNN the other day, and I deliberately don't watch a whole lot of these shows anymore because they drive me up a wall. But Wolf Bull Blitzer he was talking about the Swift Boat ad, and what he does is he shows some of the more scurrilous and false comments on it without bothering to add on, oh, by the way, nothing supports these comments. And I, when, for instance, when it came out, who is that, Thurlow? who also happened to receive a Bronze Star, and there was another gentleman from the same day that Kerry got his Bronze Star, and
yeah.
And the whole written record and everything supports Kerry. There's people falling out of the woodwork now to speak up and say John Kerry's being honest, but they don't get the coverage as much. Is that?
Yeah.
What does one do under those circumstances?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I was also revolted by Blitzer. I saw him interviewing David Gergen, the former advisor, and he said to Gergen the other day, he said, should Kerry apologize? I thought, you know, when he's ever had, you know, in a discussion about yeah. Henry Kissinger or Robert McNamara, has he ever proposed that they apologize?
Yeah.
I mean, why are we discussing whether Kerry should apologize?
How about the people that have been dishonest?
It's an outrage. And, you know, you made one of the crucial points just now. None of the records from the Navy support the accusers of Kerry. All of the documentation supports Kerry. That's number one. Number two, all but one of the people on the boat with Kerry support his story.
Yep. Yep.
So this is an absolute fraud that has been purchased with the help of a couple of $100,000 from the top Republican Texas contributor, and they have seized control with the shallowness and the brainlessness of people like Wolf Blitzer. Seized control of the whole discussion for the last 2 weeks. It's an absolute outrage.
Yeah, and on top of that is, you know, nobody in the press calls them the liar. It's they keep saying that their credibility is being questioned, but, I mean, obviously yeah. they've deliberately lied.
Well, it's starting to happen now. I mean, yeah. actually, I saw earlier today the Associated Press actually did use the word liar
oh, well,
to
good.
Refer to these
Professor...
people, did talk about their lies. Even John O'Neill now, who wrote the book that's now a bestseller.
We're on a break now.
Being, quote, unquote, unfit for command. O'Neill is now revealed to be a liar.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Protesters are demanding we bring our troops home from Iraq immediately, but we can't do that. You see, the Iraq
overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Protesters are demanding we bring our troops home from Iraq immediately, but we can't do that. You see, the Iraqis are very hospitable, and the new leader we selected for them has asked our troops to stay. If we brought them home now, we would risk insulting our hosts. And then who would be there to keep an eye on things while we extract our oil from below their soil? And there have been complaints about American mercenaries torturing Iraqi prisoners, but who are you going to trust to soften them up so they can lead us to all those missing weapons of mass destruction? The government? Or a private security firm that can do the dirty work more efficiently for less money with less accountability? Privatization. It works.
Tells and opposed gay marriage thing to a point where it's got something to do with values, but they don't really know what the heck they're doing.
Well, this is what they do. And Dave, it's actually very simple. It's three letters, L-I-E. And here's what I mean. The other day, it was about 3 o'clock out here in Vermont, and I was heading home from somewhere, and I flipped on Hannity starts on one of the local stations. I flipped him on to see what his top, you know, talking points were going to be.
Did you take any medication for it?
No. Well, I can make it about 120 seconds, and then I have to stop, get out of the car, and puke, and then I can go on home. But he was talking about this 1971 testimony that Kerry gave before the Senate, and he had the balls to sit there and say that Kerry accused everybody in the military of, you know, basically war crimes and atrocities, and he didn't have any supporting evidence. He had no supporting evidence for it whatsoever. And I was listening to that, and I was going, gee, did anybody think to tell Sean Vanity about the Winter Soldier investigation? This is first off, just because they're on radio, just like me, doesn't mean we're smart. You know? The thing what people got to understand when you hear something on the radio, go check it out. Don't believe the host, people. Don't be so stupid.
He knows what he's doing. He's there to sell a bad product, and he's there to distort and in every way that he can mislead us. He knows that. He's conscious. He's selling a product that's not worth buying.
No, that's why they got to give it away. I know how his show gets distributed. Well, all right, anything else you want to add there real quick, Dave?
What's that?
Anything else you want to add there real quick?
No, that's real good, Ramon. Thank you, and do keep up the good
work.
Hey,
how's California? How's Humboldt County doing, by the way, since you guys kicked butt on the loggers that wanted to throw out your district attorney or whoever that was?
We have a magnificent group of people. Just the other day, Amy Godwin was up here, and the house was packed two times over in the biggest auditorium around, and a lot of people here are thinking people.
Keep up the fight, brother. I got to let you go. We're coming up on a commercial, Dave.
Take care, Ram.
Thanks a lot for calling. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman program. Tom is off in New Mexico. He'll be back Monday.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The AFL-CIO has joined a growing list of organizations stepping up to monitor polls on Election Day. After the debacle of 2000, numerous groups want to make sure voting goes more smoothly this time around. The Federation, which has endorsed Democratic candidate John Kerry, plans on setting up voter advocacy teams in 12 battleground states. The teams will be charged with educating voters on their rights under the new 2002 Help America Vote Act and to make sure that voters are properly registered. Concerns have been growing in states that plan on rolling out electronic voting machines for the first time. Some states, including Maryland, Florida, and California, have reported problems with the machines during test runs and in smaller statewide elections.
Jockeys who sued and won the right to wear their union patch during the Kentucky Derby filed in U.S. District Court this week to have the Kentucky Horse Racing Authority pay their attorney fees, totaling more than $93,000. In April of this year, members of the Jockeys Guild threatened to defy state law prohibiting the display of promotional symbols during races. Kentucky Derby jockeys threatened to wear their union patches anyway, saying the racing authority was violating their First Amendment rights. But the labor action wasn't necessary after a district court judge ruled on May 1st that jockeys could wear their union logos.
Machines during test runs and in smaller statewide elections.
Jockeys who sued and won the right to wear their union patch during the Kentucky Derby filed in U.S. District Court this week to have the Kentucky Horse Racing Authority pay their attorney fees, totaling more than $93,000. In April of this year, members of the Jockeys Guild threatened to defy state law prohibiting the display of promotional symbols during races. Kentucky Derby jockeys threatened to wear their union patches anyway, saying the racing authority was violating their First Amendment rights. But the labor action wasn't necessary after a district court judge ruled on May 1st that jockeys could wear their union logos. Albert Fiss, vice president of the Jockeys Guild, explains why it's so important for jockeys to be able to display their union patch.
It's our intent to raise the awareness of the general public as well as the race fan that these jockeys do a very dangerous job, do not get paid, by and large, very much money for the job that they do, and it's high time that they get the kind of benefits that other people in similar professions are receiving.
A nationwide stoppage at diamond mines across Botswana has entered its fourth day. Thousands of miners continue to defy a court order to go back to work in Botswana, the world's leading producer of
uncut.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. By the way,
It's high time that they get the kind of benefits that other people in similar professions are receiving.
A nationwide stoppage at diamond mines across Botswana has entered its fourth day. Thousands of miners continue to defy a court order to go back to work in Botswana, the world's leading producer of
uncut.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. By the way, folks, I misspoke right before that break. Tom will be back on the air here tomorrow, actually, through the wonders of modern broadcasting. We'll be doing a remote from out in New Mexico. So I'll be sitting here sending Tom out to you, but Tom's going to send himself to me. So he's going to be in doing a live show tomorrow. Okay, I'll get to all this other stuff of what's going on here. But right now on the line, we have Victoria Jones. And hello, Ms. Jones. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. Yeah, I want you to know, you have one of my favorite...
Yes, although Lynn Cheney's speaking.
Is she?
But, yeah.
Wow.
She's introducing a husband.
Okay, well, somebody's got to introduce the guy. I mean, you can't have his girlfriend introduce him, can you? So what's going on in Washington, D.C. we need to know about then?
Well, there's even more of the Swift boat nonsense is going on. there's a certain amount of fallout from yesterday's ill-fated attempt by former Senator Max Cleland to give a letter to President Bush. And the single most tasteless remark, I don't know if you read this, single most tasteless remark of the week was made by...
Hello, Ms. Jones. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. Yeah, I want you to know you have one of my favorite...
Yes, although Lynn Cheney's speaking.
Is she?
But, yeah.
Wow.
She's introducing her husband.
Okay, well, somebody's got to introduce the guy. I mean, you can't have his girlfriend introduce him, can you? So what's what's going on in Washington, D.C. we need to know about then?
Well, there's even more of the Swift boat nonsense is going on. There's a certain amount of fallout from yesterday's ill-fated attempt by former Senator Max Cleland to give a letter to President Bush. And the single most tasteless remark, I don't know if you read this, single most tasteless remark of the week was made by Texas Land Commissioner, who went to meet him because they didn't want the president to accept this.
Right.
And the Secret Service weren't going to accept it, and so Cleland was going to post it.
Right.
Put it in the mail. So this guy shows up and wants to accept it and also wants to hand him basically a return letter saying something back from the president. In fact, some of the language in the president is quite extraordinary. But Max Cleland doesn't want to accept it because that's not why he went there.
Right. Not telling you the truth. They don't want you to know the truth. And then he went and he turned to George Bush and he said, look, tell them to stop running this ad. That's it. And he was very specific about it. John Kerry wanted the Swifty BS ad. He wanted it denounced by Bush. Now, remember, this is George Bush. He's got a history. You can go back. This is the same sort of stuff that was done to McCain, who is nowadays, for some ungodly reason, playing puppy dog to George. This is the same stuff that the Republican Party did to Max Cleland, and now they want to do it to John Kerry. In other words, you know, if you didn't avoid combat in Vietnam, if you actually went to Vietnam and did what you felt you had to do for whatever reason you felt you had to do it, if you didn't do it, you're a good person, you're a hero, and you're somebody to follow to the ends of the earth. But you know what? If you actually went to Vietnam, if you actually went there, you're a dirty, low-down, for no good for nothing, unpatriotic, anti-American little dirtball, and you need to be dumped on. Well, when John Kerry said, by the way, denounce those ads, George Bush, what did George Bush do? And this, by the way, is very typical of both Bush and the Republican Party as it stands nowadays. And George Bush says, well, I want to get rid of all the 527s. Now, you realize what George Bush is saying. He wants to shut you and me and every Tom, Dick, and Harry, Joan and Jane and John Q. Public. He wants to shut us up. He doesn't want us to have a voice. That's why he wants to get rid of the 527s. All John Kerry wants to do is say, look, that ad is so far from the truth, it is so demonstrably false, that you, President of the United States, George W. Bush, should denounce it. And as I say, what's George's response? Hey, let's shut everybody up. We don't want anybody to talk. Honest with you, if they want to control your life, they'll run. They will run on a campaign of saying, we're going to control your life. Republicans, on the other hand, Republicans will stick local control signs out in their yards, and then as soon as they get into office, they'll try to have you fall under some sort of theological program of theirs. It's disgusting. Navy report backs Kerry Rowland incident. A Navy report filed 5 days after a disputed incident in Vietnam supports John Kerry. Can you imagine that? It supports John Kerry's version and contradicts critics. Let's call them the liars who say the Democratic presidential nominee never came under enemy gunfire when he won 2 medals. 2. They're trying to say the same thing about this silver star. Carry role in incident. A Navy report filed 5 days after a disputed incident in Vietnam supports John Kerry. Can you imagine that? It supports John Kerry's version and contradicts critics. Let's call them the liars who say the Democratic presidential nominee never came under enemy gunfire when he won two medals. Two. They're trying to say the same thing about this Silver Star. Not only is Bronze Star, they try to say the Silver Star. Hey, John, you were never in Vietnam anyway. Come on, admit it. You were out snorting coke and smoking dope and drinking with George W. Bush, huh? Unfortunately, a Navy report filed 5 days after a disputed incident in Vietnam supports John Kerry. Isn't that absolutely amazing? The Navy task force overseeing Kerry's Swift Boat Squadron reported his groups of boats being fired on during the March 13th, 1970s.
George Bush campaign is going to mirror every other George Bush campaign. That is wedge issue after wedge issue, character assassination after character assassination, all wedged or sandwiched between terrorist warnings. And it's going to go on this way. I don't think it isn't surprising me that they're taking as slimy lowball an attack as they are, because they have nothing else. As John Kerry himself has pointed out, they certainly can't run on their record. You know, what is George Bush? I doubt seriously George Bush is going to point out that, you know, 1.5 million jobs have been lost,
Chris,
under his watch.
If George
point out that we were sent to Iraq and, 1,500 Americans have died, many more have been scarred for life.
If George Bush ran on his record, Chris, he'd be in jail, okay?
Absolutely.
So that's why he can't do it.
We're going to have to get beyond righteous indignation about their lying and sliming. Simply say it's not true, present the facts, and move on. And start talking about, you know, Kerry has been taking a great deal of hits lately from people saying, well, why isn't he fighting back? He's not fighting back because it's like shadow boxing.
Yep.
If you pay attention to a lie, then it simply adds credence to the lie. You should simply say it's not true, put out the record, and that's it.
Okay. Wrap it up, Chris. You got 5 seconds, literally.
All right. Everybody get out. Vote. Vote for John Kerry.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for the call. Oh.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Engineers and fishermen are working together to protect whales off the coast of New England. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Whales in coastal areas sometimes get entangled in commercial fishing lines. These lines connect buoys on the ocean surface to traps for lobsters or crabs on the ocean floor. The entanglements can injure whales and, in rare cases, drown them. An engineer at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology has created a new type of buoy to avoid these problems. Clifford Gowdy is an engineer with the MIT Sea Grant program. He says when a whale swims into a fishing line, the line can settle into the crook between the whale's body and a fin or a fluke. As the whale moves forward, the line might slide along without getting caught. The problems can start if the line pulls down a buoy and the whale runs into it.
Now, it's at that point that it either turns into an insignificant experience for the whale or turns into an entanglement. If the buoy gets caught on the appendage of the whale and the whale detects that, oops, I'm in contact with something, one can assume that there might be some thrashing involved to try to get disentangled. The whale might be successful, or the whale might get further entangled in the line.
If the whale gets further entangled, it could be injured or even die. Gowdy has created a buoy that will slip by the whale as easily as the fishing line itself. He got help with the design and testing from several fishermen in Maine and Massachusetts. The result is a device that has a flexible, tapered stem on the bottom. It's designed to make a smooth connection with the line so it will slip right by a whale and let it swim away. Gowdy says tests have shown that it's easy to use and it's effective. He hopes fishing regulators will give it official approval soon so people can start using it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell me you love Max Street.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman Radio Program. I'm Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Two of John Kerry's fellow Swift Boat commanders in Vietnam said Monday they have been misrepresented by a group of veterans and supporters of President Bush who have attacked Kerry's war record. The men say they have tried unsuccessfully for 2 weeks to get the group to change its website to reflect their support for Kerry. Rich McCann and Rich Baker are among four listed as neutral. McCann, 60, a consultant from Chagrin Falls, Iowa, said he told the group he was neutral about whether it used his picture. I was never neutral about Kerry as president, he said. If the question is whether John Kerry is fit to be commander-in-chief, my answer is absolutely. Baker, 61, now a baker by trade, says he was never contacted by the group, perhaps because he recently moved to Pittsburgh. Kerry is, quote, very well fit for command, he said. Both men said they voted for Bush in 2000 but won't again. So, yeah, you know, look, I agree that we got to stop, but we've got to talk about the realities behind some of these claims. Otherwise, you go to bed having nightmares. Incidentally, next hour, we're going to have a wonderful discussion of the upcoming Republican National Convention, along with some of the issues they won't be discussing. You can bet some of the issues they won't be discussing. For me, there is a kind of personal anger involved in this. I am not a Vietnam vet. I am not a wartime vet. I never served in a wartime military. I was one of the extremely lucky not to have to serve in a wartime military. But what really bothers me is all of these veterans, whether they're of wartime military experience or peacetime military experience, go gaga over George Bush. And they obviously go gaga over George Bush not because of what a great military leader he is, or not because of what a great participant in the military he was, but simply because he's a Republican, so therefore he must be better. Well, let me tell you something, all you good vets. And I do mean that, all you good vets, although I'm sure along the lines we disagree. George Bush lied to get us to invade Iraq. And right now there's 140,000 plus United States military sitting over in Iraq losing arms, legs, eyes, and lives because of lies told by George Bush. He's the one who was responsible. It was his decision. How any vet can support this guy is beyond me. But they do. They just don't seem to care about. I guess they just don't seem to care. Period. Screw today's military. We like George. That's what I hear. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Tom's heading off to New Mexico. We'll be back.
Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The AFL-CIO has joined a growing list of organizations stepping up to monitor polls on Election Day. After the debacle of 2000, numerous groups want to make sure voting goes more smoothly this time around. The Federation, which has endorsed Democratic candidate John Kerry, plans on setting up voter advocacy teams in 12 battleground states. The teams will be charged with educating voters on their rights under the new 2002 Help America Vote Act and to make sure that voters are properly registered. Concerns have been growing in states that plan on rolling out electronic voting machines for the first time. Some states, including Maryland, Florida, and California, have reported problems with the machines during test runs and in smaller statewide elections.
Jockeys who sued and won the right to wear their union patch during the Kentucky Derby filed in U.S. District Court this week to have the Kentucky Horse Racing Authority pay their attorney fees, totaling more than $93,000. In April of this year, members of the Jockeys Guild threatened to defy state law prohibiting the display of promotional symbols during races. Kentucky Derby jockeys threatened to wear their union patches anyway, saying the racing authority was violating their First Amendment rights. But the labor action wasn't necessary after a district court judge ruled on May 1st that jockeys could wear their union logos. Albert Fiss, vice president of the Jockeys Guild, explains why it's so important for jockeys to be able to display their union patch.
It's our intent to raise the awareness of the general public as well as the race fan that these jockeys do a very dangerous job, do not get paid, by and large, very much money for the job that they do, and it's high time that they get the kind of benefits that other people in similar professions are receiving.
A nationwide stoppage at diamond mines across Botswana has entered its fourth day. Thousands of miners continue to defy a court order to go back to work in Botswana, the world's leading producer of uncut diamonds. The strike came after a dispute over wage and bonus demands with Debswana Mining Company could not be resolved. Debswana is owned partially by the country and partially by the De Beers Group. The workers are complaining of a large gap between their wages and those of their managers. The union leaders are set to go to court today to face charges of launching an illegal strike.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a Rice University study, women who care for an elderly parent are 2.5 times more likely than non-caregivers to live in poverty later in life, and 5 times more likely to depend on supplemental security income. The numbers increase dramatically for single women who are 4 times more likely to live in poverty and 46% more likely to receive SSI when they're older.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
After 9/11, there was a headline on a French paper, "Today We Are All Americans." We had the world on our side in a way that hasn't been seen since post-World War II. Within, you know, a few months after that, with the obsession with Iraq, it was washed away. I was a registered Republican. Now I'm a Democrat. And I'm voting for John Kerry in November.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, where are we? I don't mean where does your team rank in the standings. In today's corporatized sports world, the question of where are we is a literal one, as in what city are we in? Stadiums, arenas, and so forth no longer bear recognizable names, but instead are branded with corporate logos that are anywhere and nowhere USA. For example, SBC. What the hell is it? It's the nondescript logo of a telephone company that stretches from Texas to Michigan to California. So if you're at SBC Park, where are you? The San Francisco Giants recently sold the name of their ballpark to this Anyplace Corporation. There's also the SBC Center. Where are you? At the arena of the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. In either case, SBC's bland corporate logo tells you nothing about the team or the city. It's just another symbol for corporate money. AmeriQuest Field, FedEx Forum, Pepsi Center, American Airlines Arena, Wachovia Center, Invesco Field, Reliance Stadium, Nationwide Arena, M&T Bank Stadium, Staples Center, Phillips Arena. Where are we? In pro sports, more than half of the facilities, most built with taxpayer funds, now have corporate names plastered all over them. The corporations have paid $3.6 billion to team owners to put their brands on these places, money that, believe it or not, is tax deductible for the corporation, so we subsidize the branding. The corporate rationale is that naming deals are good advertising. Continually seeing our name, says a spokesman for Petco, which recently bought the naming rights to the ballpark of the San Diego Padres, will click with people and say, I want to shop there. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, after watching a Padres game, I always say, I think I'll run out to Petco and buy a rat terrier.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. I'm Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Tom's on his way off to New Mexico. He's got a busy weekend coming up out there, a Friday evening lecture in Santa Fe, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. That's at the Armory for the Arts. And then on Saturday, he's got a Saturday morning workshop, Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. That's at the Santa Fe Women's Club. And you can get more information on those events at greatmystery.org. Greatmystery.org. Hey, 1-866-889-8894. Did you get that? 1-866-889-8894. That's the number you need to participate in today's show. And we're going to spend this hour starting off anyway. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming Republican convention. More importantly, we're going to spend a little time talking about what's not, I'm willing to bet, going to be at the Republican National Convention. God, I'm glad I don't have to go to that thing. There's people I know and who I know and I know and I know who got to be there, and it's not me. Ha ha he. Every president who has been successful, at least that I know of, in the history of this republic, has developed both informal and formal means of getting checks on whether people who tell him things are in fact telling him the whole truth. That's Dr. David Kaye talking to the Senate Intelligence Committee about the findings of the September 11th Commission. In other words, what Dr. David Kaye is pointing out to the world, without using those blunt words, and I don't know if he intended to, but it sure does point out, George Bush is an absolute abject failure of a president. Because one of two things is true here, folks. And I get caught back and forth on this one. I think it's probably a mixture of both. Either George Bush lied about why we had to invade Iraq, or George Bush just was not smart enough to ask somebody other than Dick Cheney if Dick Cheney was telling the truth. You know, he said, well, Dick, is that true? Well, okay, I guess if you verify it for yourself. Or he never apparently asked Donald Rumsfeld or anybody other than Donald Rumsfeld when Donald Rumsfeld would say things. Donald Rumsfeld must have gone in and said, and George goes, oh, gee, golly, wow, willikers, Don. Is that true? And Don goes, yeah, there's things we don't know. There's things we know, we don't know, we know. We think we know, we don't know. And, you know, how many times, and this is a question, I wish some reporter at the White House would ask that mouthpiece McClellan, and maybe even someday when they get a chance to talk to George Bush in person, how many people have asked the Bush administration this question? Mr. President, how many times did you talk personally to Hans Blix or Mohammed El-Baradei and inquire why they're coming up with such different responses to questions than you're being told? That I really, really would like to know. And for all, oh God, it drives me crazy. But you know, and I've been having this debate now with Bush supporters for about the last 2 weeks. And you know, the truth is, Bush supporters don't hold him responsible for anything, nothing, period. You know, the fact that he's president of the United States has nothing to do with nothing. He's got no job. He's got no job description. He's got no responsibilities. He's not to be held to any accountability whatsoever. Even this won't do it. What began several months ago with the emergence of shocking photographs showing a handful of U.S. troops abusing detainees in Iraq has led to a broad indictment of U.S. military leadership and acknowledgement in two official reports that mistreatment of prisoners was more widespread than previously disclosed. Well, duh! The reports have served to undercut earlier portrayals of the abuse as largely the result of criminal misconduct by a small group of individuals. To cut all the chit chat out of there, two reports come out of looking at the Abu Ghraib and other POW treatments that the U.S. has been doing to other people. And as essentially said, yeah, there were a lot of bad apples doing stuff in the various prisons. However, the people who ran the prisons are at fault too. And further, the investigation found that, well, let's read it here. Further investigation found that senior officers in Iraq bore responsibility for what occurred by failing to exercise adequate oversight and neglecting to provide, quote, clear, consistent guidance for handling detainees. All right, here we go. I'm going to cut off all my fingers right now and all both my thumbs, so I don't have any fingers or any thumbs, and now I'm going to count on both hands the number of people who are going to get fired for this. I can't. Nobody's going to be held responsible. They don't care. When I say they, I mean the Bush administration and every pandering upper yuckety-yuck in the military and all the civilians. It's a cult of personality down there. They don't care. They have no sense of responsibility. The generals don't take responsibility. The Secretary of Defense doesn't take responsibility. The Secretary of State doesn't take responsibility. That nitwit National Security Advisor, all she can do is give silly-looking grins on TV. She doesn't take responsibility. And George Bush take responsibility?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. My fingers just might grow back. Now, we can contrast their lack of taking any responsibility with this. Senator John Kerry issued the following statement regarding the recent reports on Iraqi prisoner abuse. Quote, yesterday, the Schlesinger panel released their report, which found that much of the responsibility for setting the conditions for the abuse at Abu Ghraib can be attributed to failures at highest levels of our government. Today, the Fay report will be released and will recommend punitive action for those in our military who were directly involved. But what is missing from all these reports is accountability from the senior civilian leaders in the Pentagon and in the White House. From the bottom of the chain of command all the way to the top, there needs to be accountability. The Schlesinger report makes clear that Secretary Rumsfeld was responsible for setting a climate where these types of abuses occur. And it goes on for a couple more paragraphs there. In other words, this horrible, ultra-liberal, left-wing wacko John Kerry actually wants people to take responsibility for their jobs. It's no wonder. It's no wonder It's no wonder people are out to get him. People are afraid of responsibility. This takes me back to a quote that I've held on to from General Wesley Clark. And this is back when he was still a Democratic candidate, October 29th, 2003. Quote, we've got to say again and again and again until the American people understand strong rhetoric in the aftermath is no substitute for wise leadership. That's exactly what we got to say. Then we'll say hi to Brian from New Jersey. What's up?
Hey, Rama. First of all, the chat room wants to say hello to you.
Oh!
Kill your television here.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks. And you know, I wanted to join you guys, but the computer, like I say, Tom, when he goes off, he takes all the good stuff and leaves me with all the crap. So, you know, hey, guys, I can't type it in.
But you're talking about responsibility, and it's a problem that none of the administration wants to take responsibility. But sadly, the responsibility more or less comes to the people of the United States, and other countries don't want to hear that, oh, well, your administration's not taking responsibility. They're going to put it on us.
Yep.
So it's very sad, and it's also very scary because, well, a lot of the terrorists are attacking we the people, where it's really our policy that they're attacking. So hopefully the people will understand this and get these people out, and
yep.
That's all I wanted to say. So thank you, Rama.
Well, hey, thanks a lot for calling, Brian. All right. Well, you know, but that's it. He's right. It's hard when we drop a bomb. When we drop a bomb, it's hard for people to sit there and totally excuse us, although to an amazing degree around the world, when I have interaction with people from various parts of the world, it's still amazing how many people are willing to give us the benefit of the doubt you know, and say, look, it's not you that I want to destroy. It's what your government's doing to me that I want to destroy. But anyway, responsibility is certainly one of those things we're not going to hear highlighted at the Republican National Convention. Certainly not responsibility for misleading the nation into an invasion of Iraq. Certainly not responsibility for setting the tone and the environment that actively encouraged treating these people as subhuman. They're not going to say, gee, you know, that was our fault. We blew it. They're just going to keep shrugging. They're going to say, well, you know, John really didn't deserve that Bronze Star. So that's one thing you won't hear at next week's Republican convention. Something else that you're not going to hear. Not many people foresaw the post-war. That's a bunch of crap. Where did this article come from? AP. All right. Not many people foresaw the post-war difficulties the administration has endured in Iraq. Well, if you want to eliminate everybody but the Bush administration, apparently, from what I remember reading, every Tom, Dick, and Harry was trying to tell them, hey, folks, neocons, listen up. It's not going to be that easy. President George H.W. Bush knew it, though, and another was his Secretary of State, James A. Baker, the high-priced trial lawyer who managed to get an activist Supreme Court to install George W. Bush as president. Listen to this. We would have been forced to occupy Baghdad and, in effect, rule Iraq, Bush wrote. The coalition would have instantly collapsed. Going in and thus unilaterally exceeding the United Nations mandate would have destroyed the precedent of international response to aggression we hoped to establish. Had we gone the invasion route, the United States could conceivably still be an occupying power in a bitterly hostile land. It would have been dramatically different and perhaps barren outcome. That's from George H.W. Bush's book, A World Transformed. I will bet he's not going to get up at the podium at the Republican National Convention and mention that. No, you're not going to hear diddly squid about that. Instead, somebody's going to get up and say, hey, we got to keep them ugly fags from getting married. You know, we can't have no same-sex marriages. It's going to destroy the institution of marriage. That's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear hate talk. There's much more here. I got a whole pile of things that you're not going to hear about at the Republican National Convention. You know, one person, though, you will hear for several days anyway, will be Tom. Tom, however, is going to be back live and on the air tomorrow. I'm Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom. Much more to come. So hang tight, guys. Be back!
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
20% of Iraq veterans who are in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. 1-866-889-8894. That's 1-866-889-8894. This is something that might actually make it at the Republican National Convention. Here's the quote. Only Larry is experienced to fight corrupt Washington establishment. Now, who said that about who? This is... why am I reading this? Jennifer Flowers, folks. Yes, blast from the past. Jennifer Flowers, her with a humongous hairdo. Jennifer Flowers has endorsed Larry Klayman for U.S. Senate in Florida. Why? I'm sorry. I just had to, for some ungodly, horrible, self-flagellating reason, read that one. Jennifer Flowers and Larry Klayman. What do you think a child between them would be like? That's a horrid, horrid thought. Now I'm shuddered. I can't talk anymore. I've got this big lump of nausea. Oh, let's see. Some more stuff that you're not going to hear about at the Republican National Convention. It was a year ago today that Bush said the budget for Veterans Affairs has gone up by $15 billion since I took office, a 30% increase. And my budget, Mr. Bush continues, for fiscal year 2004 includes the largest discretionary increase for the Department of Veterans Affairs ever requested by a president. But Veterans Affairs Secretary Principe himself said the truth is Bush's VA budget came up short. Many veterans groups have complained that the VA remains severely underfunded. A consortium of veterans groups has issued an annual independent budget suggesting that the department needs billions of dollars in new funding. Even Veterans Affairs Secretary Anthony J. Principe has suggested that his agency is underfunded. Quote, I asked OMB, that's the Office of Management and Budget, for $1.2 billion more than I received, he told a House panel in February. Remember that, you good veterans, because there's a lot of your fellow troopers coming back from Iraq that need a good, vibrant, healthy Veterans Medical Assistance Program. You know, not something that just sounds good in press releases, but something that really is good. It's form and function. Here's something else you're not going to hear at the Republican National Convention. 4 years ago, on August 25th, President Bush said, quote, so I support what are called microloans, small non-collateral loans allowing the poor to build a business and employ their neighbors. I will ask the Congress for $100 million to help microcredit organizations that are working in Latin America. That was from a Latin American foreign policy speech Bush gave in Miami in, August 25th of 2000. The truth is, once in office, however, Bush has tried to eliminate microloans. Bush's fiscal year 2005 budget eliminates the Small Business Association's microloan program, which guarantees loans of $35,000 or less to small businesses. That's according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Now, microloans are really cool, but let me tell you, $35,000 is not a microloan. You know, that's the one thing. I mean, of course, when Republicans talk about microloans, there's nothing micro about it when it comes to dealing with handing out money to business. Let's give as much as we can. You know, a microloan is like a lady that I knew over here in Barrie that was a single mother without a way to make a living, wanted to have a chance to do something to improve her lot in life. So she went and took training as a masseuse. And she needed $500 to buy a portable massage table. She got a microloan from a local organization for $500, bought her massage table, and on the back of that $500 microloan, she was able to actually move her masseuse business out of her home, out of her apartment, and into its own business space. That's a microloan. All right, Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The AFL-CIO has joined a growing list of organizations stepping up to monitor polls on Election Day. After the debacle of 2000, numerous groups want to make sure voting goes more smoothly this time around. The Federation, which has endorsed Democratic candidate John Kerry, plans on setting up voter advocacy teams in 12 battleground states. The teams will be charged with educating voters on their rights under the new 2002 Help America Vote Act and to make sure that voters are properly registered. Concerns have been growing in states that plan on rolling out electronic voting machines for the first time. Some states, including Maryland, Florida, and California, have reported problems with the machines during test runs and in smaller statewide elections.
Jockeys who sued and won the right to wear their union patch during the Kentucky Derby filed in U.S. District Court this week to have the Kentucky Horse Racing Authority pay their attorney fees, totaling more than $93,000. In April of this year, members of the Jockeys Guild threatened to defy state law prohibiting the display of promotional symbols during races. Kentucky Derby jockeys threatened to wear their union patches anyway, saying the racing authority was violating their First Amendment rights. But the labor action wasn't necessary after a district court judge ruled on May 1st that jockeys could wear their union logos. Albert Fiss, vice president of the Jockeys Guild, explains why it's so important for jockeys to be able to display their union patch.
It's our intent to raise the awareness of the general public as well as the race fan that these jockeys do a very dangerous job, do not get paid, by and large, very much money for the job that they do, and it's high time that they get the kind of benefits that other people in similar professions are receiving.
A nationwide stoppage at diamond mines across Botswana has entered its fourth day. Thousands of miners continue to defy a court order to go back to work in Botswana, the world's leading producer of uncut diamonds. The strike came after a dispute over wage and bonus demands with Debswana Mining Company could not be resolved. Debswana is owned partially by the country and partially by the De Beers Group. The workers are complaining of a large gap between their wages and those of their managers. The union leaders are set to go to court today to face charges of launching an illegal strike.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
According to a Rice University study, women who care for an elderly parent are 2.5 times more likely than non-caregivers to live in poverty later in life and 5 times more likely to depend on supplemental security income. The numbers increase dramatically for single women who are 4 times more likely to live in poverty and 46% more likely to receive SSI when they're older.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Hi, welcome back. Tom Hartman, our radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom, who, as we speak, is flying off to the wildlands of New Mexico. He's got a couple of appearances in Santa Fe this weekend. Friday evening lecture, We the People, a Call to Take Back America, Armory for the Arts in Santa Fe. And then Saturday morning workshop, Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation, Santa Fe Women's Club. More information, greatmystery.org. And by the way, Tom will be on the air live tomorrow because, you know, we've got our stuff together around here. And Tom's going to be broadcasting live from New Mexico, and he, you know, it kind of goes a circuitous route here, you know. He pipes it to me, and I push buttons and slide sliders and turn knobs and stuff, and I send it out to you guys. So, but it gets to you. So if you're going to listen to Tom tomorrow in New Mexico, you're listening to Tom talking to Vermont that bounces from New Mexico. He talks from New Mexico to Vermont, which bounces it back to New Mexico. Now, if it seems convoluted, I'm sorry. I can't help that. It's just... it's the nature of electronics, you know? 1-866-889-8894. Boy, you know about all those medical costs. Yeah, I picked up a newspaper the other day, local newspaper, The Times Argus. And they're talking about insurance premiums going up 9 or 10%, depending on who you're talking about. You know, of course, inflation's only... 1-2% or something like that. We could get into that hedonics discussion, but that's one I can't figure out how to do in an easy manner that I can understand. Actually, you know what? And of course, the Bush administration and George Bush and running for election wants to blame this all on these high-priced trial lawyers like James Baker, who helped install him in the Oval Office, and sometimes he likes to point out John Edwards. as a trial lawyer, too. And, they, you know, everybody seems to want to blame these trial lawyers and frivolous malpractice suits for driving up the cost of health insurance, et cetera. Well, you know, I don't mean to confuse everybody's life, but as it turns out, guess what? That may not be the case. That may not be what's responsible for all this. I don't, you know, I can't help it. 15 illnesses drive up costs. Conditions linked to 56% of increase in healthcare bills. Can you imagine that? That actually treating diseases with modern and more expensive medicine might actually be increasing the cost? I mean, this is a mind-blowing concept that more people are making heavier use of the medical system with, and there's illnesses that can be treated with more expensive processes that we all should have available to us, incidentally, is actually driving up the cost of health care. Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? Here we thought it was just those nasty old trial lawyers, but in reality, it's the patients. It's the system taking care of patients. As insurers, employers, and average Americans grapple with skyrocketing health care bills, a study being published today has found that a small number of illnesses, many of them preventable, account for most of the spending increase over the past two decades. In the first comprehensive examination of which illnesses are driving an unprecedented rise in medical expenditures, Emory University health economist Kenneth E. Thorpe tracked 370 conditions and found that 15 accounted for 56% of the $200 billion rise in health spending between 1987 and 2000. Now, I can bet you go look at the numbers. Pharmaceuticals are going to account for almost all the rest. Oh, let me see. The five conditions accounting for one-third of the increase, with heart disease at the top of the list, followed by pulmonary conditions, mental disorders, cancer, and hypertension. Man, now that's a list made for a Bush administration, isn't it? Heart disease, pulmonary conditions, mental disorders, cancer, and hypertension. So Thorpe's study published in the journal Health Affairs found that chronic conditions such as heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, and mental disorders are costing Americans billions more than they did 20 years ago. Well, duh, we weren't able to treat them on an ongoing basis 20 years ago. Higher spending on treating heart attacks, low birth weight babies, cataracts, and depression has benefits that outweigh the increased costs, Thorpe wrote in Health Affairs. Inasmuch as treatments for these conditions are cost-effective, their more widespread use is likely to represent an appropriate, if costly, expenditure by society. So, now this is going to be hard. I'm trying to figure out how Bush is going to fit this in on his acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention, that, you know, something along with those nasty old trial lawyers like my father's good friend Jim Baker, we have got to watch out for those people with heart disease, pulmonary conditions, mental disorders, cancer, and hypertension. They're making your health care costs go up. It's going to be something like that. I don't know how they're going to get it. And all this time, I mean, I was finally becoming convinced that it really was trial lawyers running around just dreaming up ways to file lawsuits against doctors. You know, I finally had been totally convinced of that it was the trial lawyers. But as it turns out, no, it's not. It's medical conditions. I swear, this is really a mind-blowing concept. We've really known. Although Americans spend more per capita on health care than citizens of any other industrialized nation, numerous studies have suggested the investments have not resulted in a healthier population. The irony illuminated by the Health Affairs article is that there are, quote, truly massive opportunities to improve the effectiveness and value and cost of health care, which are just now being pursued in public policy, said Henry E. Simmons, president of the National Coalition on Health Care, a nonpartisan group that promotes high-quality universal care. That's a very sad statement, he adds. Simmons and others point to diabetes And, you know, when we say the word diabetes, I want you to go back and think a bit what Tom's tried to teach us all about things like corn syrup and fructose sugars. Simmons and others pointed to diabetes as the most obvious example of where the United States could drastically reduce costs and improve patients' health by following well-established treatment guidelines on diet, exercise, and preventive measures such as eye and foot exams. How about preventive measures like encouraging an honestly healthy diet? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Do what you want with it. You know what I found interesting? And I know you guys in the chat room, I typed this in there the other day, so this is a repeat for you. But Tom, the other day, he was talking about the corn syrup and the effects on the body and how, you know, what he's read and studied has led him to believe that it's a, you know, it's a big problem and, you know, has a lot to do with the diabetes. And right before I heard Tom talking about that, I had been... I'm so embarrassed to say it. I was watching CNN, and they were running a series of ads, of course, for erection drugs. You know, you have your Cialis and your Viagra and, I can't think of the other one right now. But by the way, incidentally, you've noticed they've basically dropped the whole line about if you have erectile dysfunction, you need these drugs. Now they have the women saying how much better their man is after he buys these and takes these drugs, okay? So anyway, let's say even half the sales of erectile dysfunction drugs are for bona fide issues, people that have real issues. One of the major causes of erectile dysfunction is diabetes. So we have the government subsidizing large corporate farms to churn out tons of corn syrup so we can dump it into the sodas and stuff because it's cheaper to use and easier to get hold of. And, you know, maybe this is leading to an increase in diabetes, which is maybe leading to an increase in erectile dysfunction. Bob Dole. Is that why Bob Dole spoke out against John Kerry? Is he kind of getting jealous because maybe he thinks John Kerry's more of a man than he is? I don't know. You know, poor Bob Dole. Excuse me for a divergence here. But poor Bob Dole. He went from being a presidential candidate, well-respected senator, to being a spokesperson for erection drugs and soda pop. And now the poor guy has to come back and has to look for, I don't know, relevancy or something. He should be a proud man. He's got a proud life to stand on, you know. But no, he dives in. Anyway, so of course these illnesses are driving up costs. Diabetes is one of the prime examples these guys give of something. But, of course, you notice they talk about how we could reduce costs and improve patients' health by following well-established treatment guidelines. They, you know, I would say it also might behoove us to eat a better diet. You know, that's just one man's opinion, okay? Just one man. A new nationwide poll reveals strong opposition to church involvement in partisan politics, says the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, despite aggressive efforts by some religious leaders, including George Bush, and politicians, including George Bush, to encourage greater political activity by houses of worship. A poll released by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life today shows that a solid majority of Americans are extremely wary of mixing organized religion with partisan politics. This is something else you're not going to see at the Republican National Convention. They're hiding all their radical religious right-wingers. They're hiding them all away. They don't want the country to see what the Republican Party is really about. It's like what I told about before. One of my favorite examples with Republicans, local control. Every election, Republicans stick, vote Republican, vote local control, out on these lawn signs all over the friggin' place. And then after the election's over, it's like, yeah, ha ha, fooled ya, you know. See, they're going to hide because we're coming up to election time now. They're going to hide their religious, radical, right-wing whatevers. They're going to hide them away because they understand what this poll means. This poll means people don't want government in their church, and they don't want their church to become government. Kudos to the United States of America's people. They understand it, at least 65%. 69% think it's improper for political parties to ask congregations for their membership lists. And 64% oppose the idea of Catholic bishops denying communion to politicians who fail to support church teachings on abortion and related issues. Mind you, George Bush did go to the Vatican and, by news reports, asked the Pope, a foreign head of state, because that's literally what the Pope is. The Vatican is a country unto itself. George Bush went to the Vatican not too long ago and asked a foreign head of state to assist him by putting pressure on people, on the bishops, etc., in the United States to raise the religious issues of abortion, it's the same-sex marriage, etc. And the Republicans also were exposed on trying to get people to turn over their church rolls, their membership lists, over to the Republican National Committee so that they could target the religious people. But you know what? They're going to hide all of this next week. You're not going to see it. Why? Because they know that if they talk about this really loudly in public, nobody going to vote for the Republicans because people don't want to break down the barriers between church and state. The people of the United States like the protection of their religion from government interference. And the people of the United States like the protection of their government from some version of the United States Ayatollah wannabes. Sometimes the people of the United States are just so darn smart. And that's one time where they're so darn smart. That's something you will. Just in time for the convention, by the way, George Bush apparently is rediscovering environmentalism. That's right. All of these years, and you didn't know it, did you? That's right. Yeah, you. You, with the big eyes there pointing at you. Yeah, you. You didn't know that George Bush not only was our peace president, but he was also our environmental president. It's true. I got the evidence right here. I got it today from StLouisToday.com. In a striking shift in the way the administration of President George W. Bush has portrayed the science of climate change, a new report to Congress focuses on federal research indicating that emissions of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases are the only likely explanation for global warming. In delivering the report to Congress on Wednesday, an administration official, Dr. James R. Mahoney, said it reflected, quote, the best possible scientific information on climate change. Now, it seems to me they had come out with a study before. You know, the last time the administration issued a document suggesting that global warming had a human cause and posed big risk was in June 2002 in a submission to the United Nations under a climate treaty. But back then, George Bush wasn't running for re-election, so he distanced himself from it, saying it was something, quote, put out by the bureaucracy. But now we've got the Republican National Convention, and, we can't blur the lines between church and state. We got to hide our right-wing, radical, religious people away in the back room. And George is going to be the peace president, and he's going to be the environmental president. I'm going to puke. Rahm Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
I'm Sarah Turner, and this is a WIN feature story. It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington State. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their health care threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Our members understand that they're not only standing up just for themselves, but they're standing up really for the affordable health care that everybody deserves. That in this country, unless we're going to be standing up for this, we're not going to see any change. So that we hope that our actions not only result in a good contract that we can all feel good about, the employer and the workers, but we also hope that this is going to be drawing attention to this issue so that we can have our elected officials be more responsive to this and to get us a good health care plan in this state and in this country.
No further talks are scheduled with a federal mediator. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. He will be with you bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and really lively, Tom, tomorrow. Have no fear. He'll be down in New Mexico, though, broadcasting by remote from there. Let me clean up with a little bit. You know, I mean, it's one thing. While we're sitting here whining and moaning and everything, Kerry is focusing on the economy. He's doing a darn good job getting out there. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry pushed his economic message in two more swing states yesterday. This according to the Washington Post, arguing that his policies will let working families, quote, pay your bills, send your kids to college, buy a house, save a little for retirement, and go out to dinner or horror movie once in a while. You know, so while the Swifties and have been taking up all of some people like Wolf Bull Blitzer's time, John Kerry and John Edwards have been out there talking issues. They've been talking about the economy. They've been talking about the environment. They've been talking about foreign trade and military engagement, what to do with Iraq, etc. I do notice a little bit of hint of Howard Dean in some of what they're saying, and I say this because Edward said something that just the minute I read it, I was like, wow, that's a Howard Dean signature. I guess Edwards was talking to some group somewhere. Edwards attacked the Bush administration by contending that, quote, it is content to spend $50,000 on housing young people in prison for a long time. How about spending $10,000 on a young person to get them involved in life? That is one thing Howard Dean did push a lot, and the outcome is mixed, although generally I think he gets favorable reviews on it here. What he did in Vermont was Howard Dean's vision was always, you know, look, get the things like Head Start available to the people that want to take part in it. You know, get the money down to the lower education. Get kids off to a good start. Spend a little bit of money at the beginning of their lives, and we're not going to have to spend a whole ton of money on our prison industrial complex, you know, for most of their lives. And actually, the numbers in Vermont seem to have borne that out pretty well. I saw that in the article, though, and I thought, wow, there's Howard Dean. No, so, you know, and another thing, too, I got an email from Dean's group, and they got me back. They're talking about socially liberal and fiscally conservative issues, and that's the Howard Dean I truly know and love in my life. Let's see. So, at a backyard gathering in Philadelphia, Kerry promised to bring quality, high-paying jobs back to America. His campaign released a letter signed by 10 academic economists, all winners of the Nobel Prize in their discipline, asserting that President Bush and the Republicans have embarked on a reckless and extreme course that endangers the long-term economic health of our nation. Among the better-known signers are Paul A. Samuelson and Robert M. Solo of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Joseph E. Stiglitz of Columbia, and Kenneth J. Arrow of Stanford. So there you have it. There you have it.
Around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details